From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. You've got myself, Stu, here in Melbourne, Australia, and to my that side, over in Denver, Colorado, Mr. John Grace. Say howdy.
Hey, hola.
Hola. All right. No Hunter this week. He is unavailable, but he is back next week, he tells us, where we did say we would be reviewing Michael Cimino's Desperate Hours. But that's next week. This week, on the other hand, is something I had been thinking of for a little while and was one of the episodes where I thought it won't really be able to include Hunter because he's being so much younger than John and I, and John and I being very, very close in age by a few months. We both live this era of our lives, of course, in different countries. And that is the variety show. And more subsequently, the title of this episode, The Death of the Variety Show, because I believe the variety show as a format died around 1983. It certainly died here with the Australian show we're going to be speaking about later on. We're going to be speaking two shows. We're going to be speaking about an American variety show, Sha Na Na, a band that John and I are big fans of, and of the show as well. And also going to be speaking about, over here in Australia, the Don Lane Show, a name that's going to be pretty foreign to most listeners of the MMC. Don Lane, I'll get into him a little later. Huge. The show was enormous. Two times a week, slaughtered the ratings. Everybody was watching it, but I'll get into that later on. Okay, so before we get into all that, we're going to get into whipping out our junk. And John is going to go first. All right.
Okay. First, I'll annoy everybody who doesn't read with a book. This I actually pulled out of my Christmas gift pile. I got a bunch of gifts around Christmas. Wow. My mother-in-law gave me this along with a stack of books, and I just tossed it in a to-read pile and forgot about it. And then I was, you know, trying to catch up on my reading, pulled it right out, went, oh, damn, I got to show this off because halfway through it, it's amazing. It's called The Torment of Buddy Rich. It's a fantastic biography written by John Minahan, Mirahan, who I had never heard of before. And I think Quentin Tarantino had mentioned that Mirahan had written his favorite novelizations of movies. I guess he wrote a couple, and they were really kind of, they went off into their own thing. And this Buddy Rich book is him. He's on tour with Buddy Rich, like in Toronto and a few other gigs, and just getting a lot of behind the scenes stories. This is about, I think about 1974 is when this was written, or I don't think that's when it was published. Okay. It got reprinted on one of those Amazon print on demand type of things. So the writer is able to keep his stuff, in print. A lot of writers are doing this now who have a lot of like a big bibliography to republish. Yep. But it's terrific. Buddy was a pretty interesting performer. He was the great jazz drummer, had a temper. That's all here. Started out basically no formal education, growing up in vaudeville, and he was kind of like the boy wonder of drumming, like, and his father did a blackface act, so that's how far he went back. And he went into World War II. He had a rep for being angry and punching people out. He had a black belt in karate when not a lot of people were doing that. Hung out with the Rat Pack, Carson, all those guys. It's pretty fascinating so far. I'm loving it. And we're probably going to music, considered, if anybody doubts, I'm like,
yeah, probably considered the greatest drummer of all time. Even by,
I think he is. I've been listening to his music a lot in recent years as I dive into jazz and big band and all that stuff. And he's amazing to listen to. I mean, this is rock and roll before it was rock and roll.
Right? Yeah.
If you listen to him, it's exciting, intense drumming. Some of the stuff I got, because I got rid of a lot of my vinyl, so I got some pretty good credits. Let's see, this will be backwards on video probably, but Jazz Masters, a Bossa Nova box set. So it's a lot of different performers back when Bossa Nova music was big in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Peggy Lee, who I guess was considered a jazz vocalist back then. I guess now it's called Adult Contemporary or whatever. But this is a rare two-disc set of her best stuff. An audiobook offering here. Really? It's funny because Garrow just shared a very funny Sherlock Holmes audiobook cover with this, but
yes,
not
he did.
off of these outlets. But this is a Sherlock Holmes audiobook. It's put out by Blackstone
Audio. Okay,
this is the master of Blackstone Range. It's an interesting. I haven't opened it yet, but what happened was a couple of years ago, I bought this Sherlock Holmes audiobook written by Brian Clemens, late Brian Clemens, who wrote for the Avengers and
the Professionals,
wrote the Professionals, created the Professionals. One of our favorite TV scribes. Also wrote and directed Captain Kronos, Vampire Hunter. But yeah, he wrote a Sherlock Holmes radio play that I thought was great, where Sherlock Holmes meets Jack the Ripper, which has probably been done about 10 times. But had a lot of fun with it. It's done like old-time radio. You got the actors doing the dialogue. You got the sound effects and music. So it's like an old radio drama,
nice.
Like The Shadow or something like that. And it's a lot of fun. And they had put out others written by other Sherlock Holmes or mystery scribes. And this is one of many, so I've been just kind of gradually collecting them over time when they show up cheap on Amazon. But if you're into audio dramas, I highly recommend them. And you've heard every Basil Rathbone and Tom Conway old-time radio Sherlock Holmes program.
Yeah.
Let's see. And last, or well, one of the last items. This is, pick this up. During Wagner, this is 13 CDs. So I guess maybe it's the entire ring cycle. I don't know. This is going to be pretty fun to blast on my stereo that I have set up. And also, speaking of Buddy Rich, you've got the Max Roach, the collaborations, which is all of his kind of, I guess, dueling drums albums collected onto a box set put out in the EU, because all of these old jazz recordings, I think before like 1966 or so, are public domain in the European Union. So
yep,
a lot of these companies are putting out these massive jazz box sets for very cheap. I got this for like, this was $15. And you get like four or five CDs of all this music that is public domain there. And yep. It's a good way to catch up on the music without, you know, you got to buy the 24-bit remastered $30 special Blue Note edition of one album that runs 30 minutes, which is kind of a ripoff and makes it tough to get into jazz if you want to dive into it. And it's real expensive. It's discouraging, but this is a good cheap way to do it. And Max Roach was a terrific, terrific player. What is the other item? I have one more thing. Just to get a break from the jazz and the jazz and the classical, Asleep at the Wheel, their Bob Wills tribute CD. Pick this up, which is a lot of fun. It's not really country music. It's more like it's Texas swing, which is a more vibrant form of country music in the 30s. Kind of a combination of big band swing music and a little bit of country for the lyrics. But it's a fun, very fun CD.
Nice. Very nice.
But that's it for me.
A lot of music from you this week. It's very young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm getting the more where I've got that set up. I don't know if I've explained my stereo setup on the show before, but I've got a 1973 stereo receiver. So it's all tubes and it's got the equalizer right on the front.
Yeah.
I've got 1990s giant Sony speakers. My wife got at a garage sale in the 90s. long before she met me at a garage sale in Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
She probably bought it from members of Asleep at the Wheel, for all I know. And I run my CDs through a DVD player going through the 1973 receiver into the 1990 speakers, and it shakes the friggin' basement. It's like, and if somebody's playing guitar, a string instrument, it's like it's right there in your ear, you know, because it's going through it's a digital music going through all the tubes and the analog outlets, and then it's like boom, it sounds amazing.
Those 70s receivers, man, they were built to last. They will outlast all the modern ones. I mean, you'll get one. You think, it's made in 75. This thing's gonna die if it's not dead already. No, they were built to last.
Knocks you on your ass, man.
Yep.
It sounds alive. It sounds warm. It makes digital crap sound really, really good.
The problem is with the modern receivers, and here we go. Oh, they're going to complain again. But this is a truth. When they pack in so many components into a receiver, when you've got, a Blu-ray, a DVD, a CD, a phono, and you've got 12 different inputs, and you've got, you know, HDMIs, you've got analogs. Something has to give quality-wise at the end. The less is more approach to audio is... You go in with some audiophile's house, I bet you they're not sporting a receiver from modern times. They'll be hunting down those old ones, rebuilding themselves if they can, or if not, going to a specialist to get them refurbished and brought up to basically near new quality. And they are blasting those things. They ain't buying the modern day turntables, maybe except for some of the really, really high end ones where we're talking $4,500, $5,000 upwards.
Yeah.
Or they're
seeking out. I think Hunter took out a loan for one of those, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
It's like a mortgage out for that, I think.
Yeah. But they'll be tracking down those old Marantz turntables from like 1980 or the 70s or maybe early 80s. And, getting the belts redone, getting it all, leveled out and the stylus. Those things were built, man. I mean, I've got a turntable now, which is a Audio-Technica LP60X. And it's fine, but it's a starter one because I was getting back into the vinyl. It ain't the one I'm going to be hanging on to for years. I'll probably give it to one of the boys, probably my 16-year-old. And sort of tracking down one of those other ones, even if it's a couple hundred bucks for one of those older style ones, I will be digging into one of those. But if that's you done.
Yep, I'm done.
Yep. All right. I'm going to get into mine. Okay. So, get into my junk for this week. I have got, some books actually start with, got some books in from Nez. He told me we're on the way, which turned up the other day. Thank you, Anthony. Much appreciated. This one to start with. Don't know this guy, but I will look into it. Fred Zinnemann, An Autobiography. Films directed by Fred Zinnemann. It says in the back, High Noon, From Here to Eternity, Oklahoma, Day of the Jackal, Sundowners. So don't know much about the guy, but I will certainly...
Respectable mainstream director.
Basically. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
this one
I've certainly
is
seen Day of the Jackal and High Noon.
Yeah, this is one I was stunned. Oh, Nez said it was in the mail, but hardback first print copy of Belushi.
Oh God!
Written by Judith Belushi, John's late wife, or John's wife, John's widow. Right. Yeah, can't wait to read it, and some great pics in there as well. Another one I was very happy to get from Anthony is, this one goes for a few bucks. I told Nez, he goes, just take it. Keeping the British End Up, which is the sex films, craze of the, British cinema, basically the 60s, 70s, 80s,
Confessions of a Window Cleaner, Confessions of a Driving Instructor.
Yeah, the Timmy Lee films. What's the other one I'm thinking of? Oh, bollocks. And then the Confessions ones. Oh, Adventures of a Plumber's Mate, Adventures of a Taxi Driver, all those sorts of ones.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what stunned me was those Confessions movies were written by Christopher Wood, who wrote the scripts for Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker.
Yeah, I know. And starring...
So maybe they need to get new James Bond scribes from Softcore.
Yeah. And starring an actor named Harry Booth, I think his name is. Who's...
I thought... Was it Robin Asquith?
No, Robin Asquith was the one who played Timmy Lee. Harry Booth played his offsider. Harry Booth is the father of the daughter or the woman who married the British Prime Minister. What was his name? I forgot his name. So he was the father-in-law of a British Prime Minister at one point. Not John Major.
Okay.
Jesus Christ, I'm drawing a blank. Niz is probably screaming which one it is. It'll probably come to me in a minute.
I remember Coo Stark was scandalous because she was dating somebody in
Prince Andrew.
British, yeah. I don't know, politicians or royalty.
Okay, Prince Andrew. Okay. Yeah. That was Prince Andrew got around and Coo Stark was one of the conquests. Last book I've got.
Yeah, when she made headlines, the Cinemax in America showed her movies, her smut movies, like right mm-hmm. away.
Oh, yeah.
If they were able to sell them in America.
Hell yeah.
Very easily.
Nice looking woman as well.
Yeah, she was. She was cute.
Oh, yeah. I bet you Andrew was pissed off when the royal family said, yeah, get yourself disassociated with her quick. I mean, he was probably still seeing her on the side, but he was not in public with her.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he was.
That's
get
at least
a proper young lady.
Yeah, and one over 18 as well, Andrew. I mean, you know, shit. Stay away from that island, that Jeffrey Epstein plane. Oh, you can now. He's gone. Here's one I found at the thrift store. Hunter spoke about it last week, I believe it was. $3. Chimino.
Oh, wow.
Didn't realize this book is only 5 weeks old. It was only published late June. So basically what I figure is this is brand new. I'm guessing the person who initially bought this read it and just gave it to the thrift store and donated it.
Right.
Yeah. So I picked it up. That was $3. So
cool.
And Hunter's been writing about that. So I am very, very keen to read it. Okay. Getting into the home straight from the same thrift store. I picked up, this has still got the price, $1 price stickers on it. It's Skunk Anansie's album of Stoosh. This is the American version, though. Saw them live. Holy shit. This woman's skin, this front lead singer, freaking hell. Unbelievable. The best female singer I've ever seen on stage. Basically the female Iggy Pop without all the drugs.
Yeah, weren't they in Strange Days? Weren't they in that?
Might have been.
Or just the song?
Okay. I don't know. I've not seen Strange Days.
Catherine Bigelow movie.
Okay. I've not seen it. This is the American version, though, with a different running order, a rearrangement song order. So it was really weird to not hear, yes, it's fucking political, the first song on the Australian release and the European one. That's further down. And mm-hmm. it's weird to not hear All I Want is a second. That's towards the end of the album. But still a banging album, nonetheless. Okay, and to finish up, apologies, people, I got crap everywhere. Went to a record fair yet again. Took my 16-year-old son to his first one ever. He loved it. He found himself Zappa's 200 Motels on vinyl. So, But I found some nice little things. $10. My favorite Wings album, Venus and Mars.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Absolutely my favorite Wings album, that one. Another one. Glad I found this. I've already got it on CD, but I've already got nearly all the other ones on vinyl from years ago. Bonzo Dog Band's Gorilla. probably, don't know if it's exactly my favorite Bonzo album. It'd be in the top two. Another one I found was, very happy to find this. This was basically Mint Condition. And I like this album a lot. Quarter Flash, their first one. Hard to find on CD, that album. So I bought the vinyl for a tenner, I think it was. And last but not least, found this for a fiver to collect my comedy albums, Rodney Rood Live. Rodney Rood's first one. The Australian comedian. Very, very famous Australian comedian. And that is it, mate. That's all I got.
All right.
Having said all that, we are going to get into these two variety shows. A show that John and I have spoken about before in the past that we do like quite a bit. And first one that I watched, anyway, was Sha-na-na, featuring Barbie Benton as a special guest, who's really not in the show a great deal, what, maybe 5 minutes or so?
Yeah.
Yeah, not much.
Bad sketch and musical number, which was kind of their thing.
Yeah. So Sean and Arf, for those of you who don't know who they are these guys here. A sort of doo-wop band of the 50s and 60s style of doo-wop music, but they came about, what, late 68?
68, mm-hmm. I think they formed. They did. They got big quick enough to perform at Woodstock,
yeah,
which is really funny.
Yeah.
And it was almost kind of like a punk rock thing in that they would kind of try to antagonize the hippies in the audience. Like, I guess on one of their live albums, they actually say, you fucking hippies, rock and roll is here to stay, or something. Which, that's pretty punk.
Back oh, then. Yeah.
So, I think they're kind of overlooked when we think of that sort of, that kind of defying the hippie Age of Aquarius style or whatever. Like when you see the Ramones on Sha Na Na, they made an appearance on there. It doesn't actually seem that out of step to have
it
the
doesn't.
Ramones on Sha Na Na.
No, because
I always thought the Ramones were kind of, it's a throwback to 50s style rock and roll.
Yeah.
And except it's just modernized to the 70s, but they fit in perfectly, I think.
Yeah.
But this episode, I guess Barbie Benton had a singing career. This is something I totally forgot about.
Mm-hmm.
And she performs a cover of He's a Rebel. She's not really the best singer, but I think if you had a pretty face, they could get you on variety shows, and that probably counted. Yes, even back then, decades before Britney Spears, just looking good would get you a gig on TV, performing music.
Bobby Benton's far career. Better looking than Britney Spears. Way better looking.
Yeah, she is. She's a great, great looking woman. Mm. And she fits in with the tone of the show pretty well, but the humor is almost like even more juvenile than laughing. It's like that kind of almost harmless like grade school TV safe humor. Yeah, bad puns and bad jokes and just an excuse to get the guys of Sha Na Na to dress up and, hey, they're wearing a dress and wig. They're all competing for the Barbie Benton lookalike contest.
But
Barbie Benton's like, oh, she doesn't look like me.
Yeah. But some of those jokes were genuinely funny. They actually made me laugh. When I saw them, I thought, the humor is juvenile, as you said, but they were actually quite funny. The Barbie Benton lookalike contest, when Bowser goes, at the end of it, goes, oh, we've got the four contestants, 1, 2, 3, and 4, when they go to speak to Kenny, because he's such a big guy. Class him as two contestants. But, it's a 30-minute show, a blend of songs and skits. And it's just great to hear Sha Na Na sing. What, they get maybe four or five tunes into this show, I think? They really shoehorn
a lot
in.
Yeah, they're, what I really noticed was interesting. Like, when I was a kid, I loved Hee Haw. And that was a country music-based variety show. And the thing about Hee Haw was, I realized most of the show, when I watched it years later on DVD, most of the show, they were lip-syncing. Sha Na Na, the vocals were live.
Yeah.
And the instrumentation is probably a backing track, but the vocals are live most of the time. And I noticed that, so that was really cool. And another thing was, I noticed their format for the sketches is everything. It's like this block of Brooklyn or whatever. And I realized it was based on the Bowery Boys movies.
So was it?
They're kind of like the Bowery Boys.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I kind of figured out. And I'd have to watch more episodes, and a lot are kind of bootleg uploads on YouTube to appreciate. But I noticed that, I think it's kind of based on, like, it's the Bowery Boys hanging out at the soda shop, and then suddenly, okay, we have the premise for the sketches right here. Because if you ever seen a Bowery Boys movie, it's always like, hey, he can predict the future. Let's open up a fortune teller outfit. Hey,
yeah.
He can box. Let's make him a fighter. It's the same simple premise every time. And I realized that's what Sha Na Na was kind of based on. And here in the States, it was syndicated to TV stations. It wasn't shown on a network. And it would usually be on Saturday nights in most markets. Like, you would have this on, you would have Sha Na Na, and then you would have like Dance Fever or something horrible like that. And then you would have like your monster movie or whatever at 11:30. So that's how I knew Sha Na Na was basically as a syndicated show on 10:30s on Saturdays, like after the news. or, yeah, you know, 10 o'clock news.
But it was a real throwback for me to see, you know, that opening with Bowser. Bowser was always my favorite because he had that
the big bicep
and the deep baritone, you know, deep voice as well. And I remember Chico as well in there. A lot of the other names I didn't know, but I remember the faces. Santini, I remember as well. But yeah, I mean, it was just great to watch. And it was generally I walked away from this show, you know, half hour later going, if you were having a crappy day and you sat down and watched this, I defy you to say that your day didn't get better at least by watching this.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to like the songs. I mean, I do. I love them. I think Shannon are a fantastic band. And
I could listen to 50s to early 60s music, a mix of it anytime.
Yeah.
And not get bored and not feel tired. I mean, that was like when pop rock music was perfect. Mm-hmm. It was just like, it was a great era.
Well, that's why this stuff, you know, lasts. It stands the test of time. You've got artists like Richie Valens, who really wasn't around that long, but this, I mean, they're still playing him on the radio on the oldies station, but they're still playing him. They're still playing, Buddy Holly is still playing Elvis, obviously. They're still playing a whole bunch of them. So,
well, in America, they're probably best known. I should say Shanana is probably best known for their appearance in Grease.
Grease, yeah.
To millennials and such. Yeah, because they play a band called like Johnny Casino and something. I forget what their name is, but they play the band at the prom or the dance
in
Grease. Another thing was, I think the show was boosted by, in the 70s in the U.S., and maybe this happened in Australia as well, there was a 50s revival. Because of American Graffiti being a big hit, and then Happy Days on TV, which was inspired by American Graffiti, and then later Grease was of course a monster hit. The Buddy Holly story did real well in theaters, and Elvis died, so there was like this huge 50s revival thing going on, and I think that's how Sha Na Na were able to secure all these great syndication deals because they did. Something, it was a crazy amount of episodes, like 150 episodes or something.
Oh, wow, that many. That is a lot.
You will never, or it might have been 112, or it's listed on Wikipedia for however you want to give that for accuracy. But it ran for a few years, and they probably had more episodes per season than most shows.
Yeah.
And one reason you won't see it on DVD is just because of the royalties.
That's
and that sort of thing.
That's what I was going to bring up later on about the fact that we'll sadly never ever see this on home video.
Because it's not happening.
No. They're too much money to spend for royalties in return for really what is maybe a few thousand people who would buy these. I mean, I'd buy it straight away without a doubt.
Right.
But there's too much they'd be shelling out for royalties in return of what they'd be getting in sales for Sha Na Na, you know. If it was the... The Led Zeppelin show.
The audience for these is, well, the audience for this is like baby boomers and silent generation people, and then the kids that saw it.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't actually have like, you wouldn't have much of that in between audience for it. And let's be honest, the baby boomers are getting old. They don't buy DVDs anymore. They're kind of done with that. And Gen Xers who grew up in this, we watch everything on streaming now. Most of us aren't buying DVDs and Blu-rays and such, you know, except for the audiences of this fine show, but and the host as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this the futility of putting Sha Na Na out on DVD or any disc format that's gone. Mm. It's just never going to happen.
No, worst luck because it was a, I mean, and this thing flew by when I watched. I'm like, Jesus, all over already. Mm-hmm. That was quick watch. And you think
MTV.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Way before. And you look at the members of Sha Na Na, you think, you know, first of all, if we were to get at this moment in time right now, if there was to be a new variety show of this style, number one, who the hell would you put? Because there's nobody with any sort of personality like this group. Number two, would you have members in there who looked like Kenny, who was a big guy, who looked like your dad or your uncle. Most of them look like your uncle or your dad's workmates. And where's the marketability of guys like... Yeah, and I mean, Bowser's great. You know, John Bauman, I think he's a great personality. He's you know, if Fred Gwynne ever had a twin brother, I think he'd be about the closest thing to it. He's got that same long face as Fred Gwynne. But, yeah, none of these guys would be marketable today. But back then, no one cared. You know, you could hear the...
Yeah.
John, you heard the audience. They were screaming when they were on and when they were singing. They were doing you know, Mr. Bassman and Goodnight Sweetheart. And it's just great to see that people...
Yeah.
Back then, didn't care what they looked like. It wasn't all image based, and it wasn't all about marketability. It was just the band, and that was it. And the talent right. that they brought, it was all in the end. It was all about the talent that they had, which is the other way around to this day.
Well,
bands have all yeah. marketability, but no freaking talent at all.
Right, right. It's, I mean, you couldn't do a variety show today with today's performers because everybody's kind of miserable. Like, what do you mean? You have the Billie Eilish Prozac hour or something? It's just it's just not going to... Everybody's miserable. Everybody's unhappy. Everybody's on antidepressants. Everybody's on lithium or they hate their lives or because they think it's supposed to be something else or pandemic really messed them up or whatever. You don't have a very... You don't have a youth culture that embraces joy and mm-hmm. fun is what I've noticed.
Well,
maybe in sports a little bit. That's about it.
Well, we got it kind of, sort of, with the Henry Rollins show. No one cared. Yeah. Lily Allen did it.
He's not meant to host anything.
Nah, he's not.
He doesn't have a personality. He looked like a nervous teenager. He's a middle-aged man, but he's like a nervous teenager on that show. It was really weird to watch.
Yeah, it was. Lily Allen did it in the UK. I think she was in the UK. I don't know, she's British. Absolutely horrible. I saw one episode and said, this girl can't carry a damn thing. You to do that sort of thing, mm-hmm. you've got to be able to engage and carry the show. When things go wrong, pick up the pieces and just act as if nothing happened. None of them have got it. Yeah, I'm not saying I have, but I'm not trying to audition for a bloody variety show spot as a host. But if you're taking that gig on, you better have your crap together. And none of them have got it.
Yeah. We'll get more into that when we talk about Don Lane, but it's just like it's not everybody can be a talk show host. It's actually it's a skill.
It is.
It's like, you know, there has to be a balance within you as the performer. So we'll talk more about that when we get into Don Lane.
Yeah. Would you just real quick, would you call the ability to be a talk show host now a lost art form?
Completely.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the assholes that host these things now in the States, Steve Colbert or Jimmy Fallon or who's the fat
Seth
British
Myers.
Guy who's
leaving the show? James.
Corden the guy. And
Seth Myers.
It's like they don't really do a show that's compelling for me to watch because all of them are strangely very politically biased, which is a weird thing to send people to bed on. And I was thinking back of Carson, and Carson was a liberal guy or whatever, but you never knew it watching his show. You didn't know where he stood because he made fun of everybody. I mean, there's clips of him making fun of Joe Biden for plagiarism and being stupid from 1987 and or 88, whenever he had to drop out of the Democrat primary. And he went after everybody. But it wasn't mean. It wasn't like, screw you, you Nazi.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get you out of the White House for this crap. Because he knew people have to go to bed feeling good. They don't want to be pissed off about the world. And he could hold a conversation with, they could have a scientist on there. They had Carl Sagan was a frequent guest, or James Randi. Or you could also have a musician who's a bit temperamental, like Buddy Rich. And they were cool on Carson's show. You know, Dean Martin, who's like a perfect talk show guest.
Yeah.
Actors, comedians, if the comedian he thought was good enough, he'd bring him out on the couch over to the couch and he'd talk to him. You know, it's just that was a great way to end your evening if you were the average American.
Yeah.
And the next day you go to work at the water cooler, you're going to talk about that comedian you saw in Carson the night before, or what Johnny said in the monologue, or Ed screwing up, or Carson making a drunk joke about Ed, or Dean Martin walked out unannounced and, threw the show into
drinking hand. Or,
Burt Reynolds Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise squirted water in each other's pants or something like that, whatever the hell, you know. And you don't have that anymore. Now it's, hey, guess what Colbert said about Trump last night?
I
Trump
know.
has
It's
been
like, who
president in
cares?
over a year.
People are
It's like every years.
bombarded. People are bombarded with politics these days. I mean, it's just gotten out of control. You think I want sanctuary away from political talk just for an hour, please. And
Yeah, and it's making society rude. It's making society abrupt. And I think it's making people miserable. Like they're completely political on Facebook, on everything. And it's just like, it's ridiculous. It's like, well, you know, in the US, we of course have that serious, it seems like a serious phenomenon of the mass shootings or whatever. And I think a lot of it has to do with we have a weirdly hypertensive society that is just giving people this sort of bizarre, I'm not sure what it is, but I've never seen anything like it. It's like it's society is stressing people out.
Highly
Pop
de
culture is stressing
highly
you out.
divisive society is what it is.
Yeah,
Highly
it's not
divisive.
making people happy.
No.
It's not entertaining people. It's not making people relieved or feeling joy or excitement about anything. It's just like everybody's miserable. It's like this is it. You're screwed.
Well, you
This is like watching the ending of a bad Twilight Zone
let's
in
look at
everything, you know.
SNL just real quickly, even though we didn't watch it, but we'll talk about that. Now, early episodes of SNL,
Sure.
I have got, from what I can ascertain, they made fun of both sides back then.
A bit,
A bit, yeah. I'm sure they're more left-leaning more than anything, but there was the odd.
But they weren't overtly political either, you know.
No. But it's not like they are today, or especially back in
Right.
the Trump years where it was just insufferable to watch. And
Yeah.
so that's a perfect example of there. But getting back to Shanana as well, the episode that we watched up on YouTube, and thanks to the uploader for putting this up, very, very thankful, because it came with the original adverts from back then. There was an advert,
Yes.
John, for I missed the name of the brand, but it was a dishwashing liquid. Do you remember who it was?
Lemon Fresh Joy.
And
Lemon Fresh Joy.
see the actress who was in it?
PJ Souls,
PJ
right there.
Souls. I thought, holy hell,
Yeah,
that's.
PJ Souls played the teen daughter.
And this is 1979, this episode. So by then she's done Carrie, she's done Halloween, she would have just done Rock and Roll High School, and she's still doing adverts.
Yep.
Get an actor or
Still
actress
doing
today.
ads and TV pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And get an actor these days who've done real, two massive hits with Carrie and Halloween. Do you want to do an advert?
Yeah.
No. No, I'm better than that. Or they'll price themselves out of possibility by saying,
Hey, quit fighting.
get off.
My cats are fighting right now. This
Jeez.
one-eyed little monster. I mean, can't really get him on the camera, but he's terrorizing Fez. Fez, just stay up here.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Calm down,
They
Fez.
hate each other.
Oh, it's not good. Yeah. Hence why I don't keep cats. Not a fan of cats at all. But
We probably shouldn't have gotten more than one, I'll put it that
yeah,
way.
they're too territorial, man. It's like, this is my domain. Oh, we got a second one. Shit's going down. But
Yeah.
that's cats for you. But Shanana, yeah. I mean, it was great to hear the songs. Just great to see, a lively a crowd and a lively cast. Just everyone just enjoying themselves and just giving you that feel-good factor. Nothing was beaten about your head with oh this and that and whatever and oh Carter administration.
Yeah.
No one cares. Just it was there for the fun. That's all it was. Yes, some of the sketches were a bit silly. The one in the bar that was in outer space or whatever it was. I mean, that was a bit silly, but it was still fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the Barbie Benton lookalike contest because I wasn't actually expecting the members of Shananada to come out dressed in drag. Don't know if you can sort of do that thing these days because the hashtag mob would be after you, like I give a shit
Twitter
anyway.
would get the show canceled within 48 hours. There would
Probably,
be
yeah, yeah,
pressure the advertisers and everything.
yeah. But we will link to this episode in our show notes, as we will the Don Lane one. Mate, enjoyed it, loved it. Is the Ramones one on YouTube at all or not?
I don't think so. You probably have to look for it. It might be unlisted. I know that the clip was on the Ramones special DVD that gathered up as many other TV appearances as they could clear.
That was
a great DVD set.
Raw.
My wife got it for me years ago for Christmas.
It's called Raw. Ramones Raw.
It might be out of print now, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Is it Ramones Raw? Okay.
Raw, yeah.
It's terrific. Yeah. It's a great appearance.
It was
calm down, Fez.
Yeah, it was actually Ramones Raw.
Yeah, the Ramones.
Ramones. All right,
my favorite band.
Yeah.
He would always say, "John, your favorite band? That's all you listen to." as he spins Godsmack for the 90th time that week.
Yeah, fun times. All right, we're gonna rate this episode. I'm gonna give it a 10, man. If we do it, I loved it. I thought it was a freaking blast. I absolutely loved it.
I had fun watching it. It was at least a 8 probably. And, you know, I'm not comparing it to The Godfather or something like that, but it was a blast to take a trip in time. And there's something I said, I said it on Twitter, and I'd still stand by this. If you really want to go into a time warp or time machine, don't watch these documentaries about the 70s. Go back and watch variety shows from the 70s.
Yeah.
That is what the mood of the country was. That's what everybody was watching.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we all felt. It's not clips of Nixon or clips of Studio 54. That wasn't most of the population. Most people were watching Donnie and Marie and Sonny and Cher and, you know, whatever was on at the time that was big. It's like there was a lot of variety shows on television in the 70s and still on network TV. I would say it was probably at least a fourth of shows broadcast were variety.
Was it really that much?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, Pink Lady and Jeff, it was a notorious flop, but people forget. Before that, there were tons of successful shows. Donnie and Marie was a huge show.
Oh, yeah.
Sonny and Cher was a massive hit.
Yep.
And there's a lot that I've never seen or I just don't remember. One I pointed out was the last one on network television for a while was the Mandrell Sisters, which was Barbara Mandrell and her sisters. And it was country oriented. It ran for 2 years and I looked it up. It had something like 38 or 40 million viewers a week, which is staggering. And I had no idea. And it only ended because Barbara Mandrell was overworked and she was exhausted and she couldn't do it anymore.
Okay.
Because she was still touring and doing the show.
Yeah.
She had to cut it.
Okay.
And I found out they tried to bring the variety show back in 1987. ABC did a Dolly Parton variety show called Dolly.
Mm-hmm.
It started out great ratings and then the ratings just slid over time throughout the year. It's just the format had worn out its welcome with the public, or I forget what was the big thing on TV then, but people just weren't into it.
Well, I mean, it goes back to what we were saying before. I mean, if you were to get Gen Z to sit down and watch his show now, they get up within 2 minutes and say, "I don't understand it."
Yeah.
What's the entertainment?
They can't take it. They don't understand entertainment. Entertainment to them is in blips. Music is enjoyed through video games, maybe some cartoons or something. It's like, I have talked to young... I've talked to young people who, you know, because my kid has friends and stuff, and it seems like all they watch is like Rick and Morty or kind of like a animation. Like that seems to be all kids watch now. Like I don't even know how many real sitcoms they watch, or you know, maybe they watch a Seinfeld rerun or something. And it's strange. It's different. It's a different time.
The thing that a couple of my kids used to watch a few years back, they've stopped watching now, thank goodness, was they would watch other families on YouTube. I said, "What are you watching other families for? You've got your own." I said, "Is this the sort of life you wish you had, where you've got the kids screaming through Toys R Us with a father going, 'Oh, wow, it's a new Star Wars figure.'"
That Ryan kid? Is that the Ryan kid?
Yeah, I think it's him, yeah.
About Ryan?
Yeah, yeah, I think it's him.
The young Asian kid? Yeah, yeah.
No, it's like there's one guy.
But yeah, my son was watching it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
And they watched, who's that idiot? Dan the Minecraft man or the fucking hell his name is.
Dan TDM.
Yeah, I thought, what are you watching this guy with blue hair play video games for? I mean, thankfully they don't watch that crap now. They've outgrown that. But, I mean, they're still, you know, some of my kids, my 16-year-old, my 12-year-old, or nearly 13-year-old he is, sit there and watch guys or kids slightly older than them, maybe 19, 20, playing video games. What was Amazon? While they're in a little photo in the corner, like video in the corner, and they're playing games. Dude, you just killed my castle! I said, what are you watching this for? Why are you watching people screaming at video games? I said, if anybody's playing a video game past the age of 18, and especially doing it on YouTube for little kids to watch, you need to be freaking investigated pretty quick, especially grown men. I mean, you are, you need to be hearing that knock on the door by the feds.
My son was watching the Dan TDM thing. Then he went through the PewDiePie phase. And then...
Yeah.
Then he started watching all these Anthony Bourdain knockoffs on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
There's this guy, like, Greatest Ever Food Review Show, Sonny. It's like this guy who his delivery is just like Anthony Bourdain's, like his rhythm of speech or whatever. It's like, and he goes throughout Asia and tries all these different exotic and often gross type of foods or meals or whatever. And there's several of these different guys that he watches, and they're all like inspired by, I guess, Anthony Bourdain shows of him traveling different countries and eating different food. But there's a ton of these guys on YouTube, and I guess they must do really well because they've hired cameramen and producers.
There's one channel.
YouTube shows do very, very well.
They do. There's this channel I watch called Travel Thirsty, and you never see the guy at all. You just see, you know, him in the kitchen filming the staff and the chefs making everything. And then at the end, his plate comes and he eats it. But, you know, you don't see him chewing on food for 5 minutes. Like I said, you never see the guy. But he's racking up views of like 3 million. There's one he did on, and he travels around America. And he also does go internationally sometimes. He did a video about, some Japanese lobster. 120 million views. I thought, what the, how can 120 million people be interested in a Japanese lobster? I mean, it looks pretty because it's many colors on it, but I mean, there's money in it. He's getting some coin from YouTube for it, so good on him. But
I think it's kids because all these videos are all ages, and that's probably why my son got into it.
Yeah,
and kids are fascinated by that type of, you know, looking around the world at different things to eat and all that sort of thing, and it's more of a childlike thing, and it doesn't have the Anthony Bourdain, let me go hang out with this porn star, and we're going to talk about this bar we like to go to. It's not, you know, Bourdain stuff is an adult-oriented show.
Yeah, definitely.
And these are basically aimed at juveniles, you know, that's all ages. So it's like, you know, we don't see what these guys do with their plumbing, you know, after the cameras are off. So I think that's what it is, and kids are fascinated by the different culture thing and different food and, you know, because, you know, it's not like Marvel movies make them excited about movies.
No.
Put it that way.
I was, going back to the Shonana show, I was very, very happy to see the episode, the commercial, because I like those old commercials. It shows how things were then and how, you know, you can go to Hungry Jack's. It's called Hungry Jack's here, but it's Burger King. You go in there for 38 cents, you can get a yo-yo with your meal deal and...
You know,
that seemed to be a big thing that they were advertising.
Right, Fez is safe. You can go. Okay.
All right. And, all right. You know, they'll advertise laundry powder and just, you look at the ads now, you think they would never make ads this, I'd say the acting was stale at best, but it wasn't there for the acting. It was there to push the product. That's what you're there for. Whereas now it's all about, now it's all about the, cinematography and the acting and the products, and it's this. It's this car wax. I mean, who, you know, you got it all asked about.
Well, you know what I found really interesting? There's a travel agency ad in there.
Yes.
In the Shanana clip. And, you know, a common meme you see around right now, because everybody's so against, they are convinced chemicals and high fructose corn syrup are making everybody fat or obese, and it's a government plot or whatever. And you always see these memes. It's like, beaches today, and it's all these fat people, and then beaches of the 70s, everybody skinny and ripped. Well, this travel ad kind of proves, no, we weren't necessarily in better shape back then, because
nope.
The men in the ads are all these flabby dudes that haven't done a push-up since high school.
But it's the real thing. It's not, you know, getting a bunch of 25-year-old guys who, you know, work out in the gym, you know, 10 times a bloody week. And, it's real. I mean, you see the people in the ads, they're in their 30s and 40s. Not today. You're pushing that shit by 20-somethings.
The woman will look like a decent-looking middle-aged woman, and then the husband looks like E.G. Marshall with his shirt on. And it's just, it's like, okay, this is kind of how it was. It wasn't these memes or things that you see which shows all these ripped people, which were probably taken from advertising or film where they screen the extras to make sure they had no fatsos in there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just reality, because I don't remember anybody being super muscular or ripped or anything back then. It's just everybody just kind of looked average, you know?
Yeah. And there was that video of, or that advert of that one group of teens, and that black teen, he goes, "You tell me I can be an engineer?" or something like that, he said. No way would that ad play today. Wait, you telling me I can be an engineer? Yeah, that was so funny. Oh man, that was funny. But look, we'll finish up with Shauna Na. Hey, check it out. It's on YouTube, listed as Shauna Na with Barbie Benton. It runs about 34 minutes. The actual episode is 29, I believe it was, because the uploader hasn't worried about cutting it off. And they've put some more adverts on the end of whatever came next. Then there was a thing called the Guinness Game. You know this show, John? You ever heard of that?
I had never seen that before.
I looked at it. I watched like it. And I go, oh, wow, Bill Bixby, cool. I didn't know this show here we did. No, it wasn't Bill Bixby. It was another guy. Who was his twin brother? I forgot the guy's name. I looked it up, but I go, don't sound like Bill Bixby, but geez, it does look like him. But it wasn't him. It was someone else. But it was called the Guinness Game, and it was pretty dumb. There's a guy called Mr. Ego. He called himself this dude with backwater dude with a ponytail who could balance himself on two. I don't know. It was just ridiculous. And there were three panelists who had to bet so much money that he could go as long. I don't know. It was really, really dumb. It was only a few minutes of the thing. But
Stu, there was a law back in the U.S. in the 70s that game show hosts had to either look like Bill Bixby or look like Burt Convy. Couldn't be in between. Yeah. Had to be either one of those guys. Dark skin, dark hair, you know.
Because I looked at it, I go, man, Bixby was a busy cat. He was doing the Incredible Hulk and doing the Skinner Game. Oh, no, it's not him. But I tell you what if you guys watch this and you see that little 5 minutes after Shauna Na, you'll go, yeah, Stu, I see what you mean. He looks like Bixby a lot. But anyway, we'll move on from that and we will go into the Don Lane Show.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, one that a lot of people would not have heard of, but if you lived here in Australia, you knew it because it was enormous. It played two times a week, Monday night, Thursday nights, and on Channel 9, and was basically required viewing. Everyone was talking about it, especially around this time. The show finished in 83. That was his last one. I don't know what happened. I think they cancelled it. Don't know why. It was still immensely popular. Don't know if they could afford Don Lane anymore. Anyway, bit of a backstory on Don Lane. He's an American host, actually. Born in New York and came to Australia in 65, I believe it was. He's born in 33, if memory serves. Came to Australia in 65. The cat agrees with me, I think. Throughout most of his career, swanned in and out of Australia. Would come here for a few years, go back to the States for a little bit, come back to Australia for quite a few years. Then Don Lane's show started in 75, I believe, or 76, 75, I think it was, till 83. Don then went back to the US for a little bit, came back to Australia in the late 80s, I believe it was, went to the US again, and then came back here and stayed here, eventually passed away here in 2009, and is actually buried here in Sydney, which was his home. Even though the Don Lane show was filmed in Melbourne, Don himself actually lived in Sydney, as we see with the South Sydney Rabbitohs jacket that he wears. He was a lifelong member of the Rabbitohs team, Russell Crowe's team, yes, that team. And, yeah, basically, the show is a two-hour format. Forgot it ran as long as it did. I thought it was only an hour, but it was actually a two-hour show. Don was a jack of all trades. He was a host. He was a singer. A good singer. No, not so much. But he had that sort of sort of crooner style voice. He wasn't exactly Sinatra or Dean Martin, but he was not unlistenable. It wasn't like, oh, got to turn him off or got to put him on mute. I can't listen to him. He was okay.
He's kind of like your standard nightclub crooner act.
Yeah.
That would be in Vegas or a big city at that time in the 70s or late 60s, kind of doing that Dean Martin style or Bing Crosby style, like a little more jazzed up maybe.
Yeah. I believe he was actually discovered by an Australian talent scout in a Hawaiian nightclub circuit. Even though he's a New Yorker through and through, he was actually discovered in a Hawaiian one, brought here in 65 to fill in for a comedian. I don't know. It was a Dave Allen. Might have been, who was doing
show. Yeah, I think it was
here.
Dave Allen.
Yeah.
I looked it up. He was recommended by Wayne Newton.
Yeah.
Wayne Newton actually recommended him to the producer who was looking for a talent.
And yeah.
Wayne Newton said, you know, Don Lane's your guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, he could do it. And yeah. I guess Wayne was right. Very perceptive.
Yeah.
But yeah, he replaced Dave Allen. What I read was Dave Allen had a contract dispute or just quit doing TV and or something.
And they just ripped him off the air and flew Lane over and, pretty much cemented himself as a real favorite with Australians. And he really did love Australia as a country. He was, you know, also, you know, obviously a very proud American, but he loved Australia enough. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, I am a Don Lane fan. There's that. The Channel 9 salutes Don Lane. Not to mention these absolute behemoths of home video releases that Umbrella put out. The Don Lane show there, eight-disc set with 16 episodes on there, of which this one we're talking about is on there. And the Don Lane show 2 so you got a 16-disc set as my shit flies everywhere, which equates to about 50-something hours of Don Lane show. So, you get a really good broad idea of what the show was like then. So anyway, that was it. Don Lane would always come out, do a monologue, do a song, most times anyway. His sidekick is, as I pick up my stuff, another guy I'm a big fan of, Mr. Bert Newton there, who... you may think, oh, what's the appeal of this guy? Bert Newton is television royalty. He is, rest his soul, he passed away last year. And I tell you, when Bert Newton died, it's broke. Breaking news, Bert Newton dies all around the country. It was just outpouring of grief for the guy. He was loved. Everybody liked him. He was, actually, him and Don Lane were known at, pretty much around the country as being really nice guys you could go and say hello to and, you know, say, you know, shake their hand, say thanks for the... They were just generally nice guys. And also reading up on Bert Newton, two guys who were very, very, very close as friends for the rest of their lives. Don Lane brought Bert Newton in 75 when Newton said his career was pretty much on the slide. The producer of the Don Lane show suggested someone else. Don Lane said, no, I want Bert Newton on there with me or I'm not doing the show. And they brought Bert in and, yeah, it was literally TV magic with those two. They were a hoot. together, and the chemistry shows really. They knew. Burt was saying in an interview I read, he could pretty much anticipate what Dom was going to say next for a show that was basically unscripted. Yes, you had a script with, okay,
yeah,
we're going to be interviewing such and such, then there's the musical number, then there's the Don's wheel, but a lot of it was off-the-cuff humor. So, yeah, you would have that. Then you would have, on this episode, we had, yeah, an interview with Rolf Harris, which I did not know was on this episode.
Yeah, that wasn't mentioned on the YouTube description.
No, it wasn't. And for those of you who are unfamiliar who with Rolf Harris is, well, just go back into the episode that Nez and myself did on Jimmy Savile, and you'll hear all the dirt on Rolf Harris. And while he was not the level of vile individual with kids that Jimmy Savile was, he still was, and was incarcerated for it, and was the first case I remember of here of cancel culture. When he was convicted and jailed, his home state of Western Australia ripped down everything. Statues,
wow.
Plaques. There was a street or a way named after him. They ripped that down and renamed. He was erased from Australian history. He's not spoken about these days. If he's spoken about it, it's with a sneer how much they hate Rolf Harris. And I mean, you know, the interview itself was fine. It was mildly amusing. The song he did about WA was, you know, it was thing. But you know, the thing is, a lot of people here say, "Oh, you know, Rolf Harris. If you own anything by Rolf Harris, you're disgusting." Well, I am disgusting because I fucking love this album by Rolf Harris. And it's funny as shit, so go to hell.
Well, I had a fun time explaining to my wife and son today that I still listen to Gary Glitter, even though I wouldn't care if he was shot by a firing squad.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But you can't deny those early 70s records aren't great. The thing is, it has more to do with his producer and his backing band than him, you know, anybody else could have done those albums, probably been just as famous.
That's so, like they say about...
I appreciate it as a collaborative thing, not one man.
They say the same thing about Sweet, where, you know, oh, it was pretty much a manufactured rock band. Well, yeah, they had Chin and Chapman behind them writing the songs, but the stuff that they were doing really... they might have been in their hits. Doesn't mean it was any good. It was the good stuff. The good stuff was the stuff written by Sweet, where it was way different to what... You know, Fox on the Run and Ballroom Blitz and you know, all those style of songs were Rebel Rouser, you know, their version of that. So we get the interview with Rolf Harris. Rolf sings his WA song. Then we get to the good part where we get Valerie Perrine in. Bit of context, this episode is based thematically around the Village People. They were in the country at the time. This is broadcast 2nd of June 1980. And Can't Stop the Music here. And yes, this is me shoehorning this freaking movie into this episode because I'll never get a chance to speak about it. They were absolutely huge over here. Village People and Kiss were the two biggest bands of 1980 in this country. And maybe just a bit earlier than that as well. Yeah, so we get an interview with Valerie Perrine, who, looks absolutely freaking stunning, but she is not there collectively with it. She seems really tired. She doesn't know where she is. She says, "Am I in Sydney or in Melbourne?" He goes, "You're in Melbourne." And I mean, she's trying her best. She's flashing that beautiful smile of hers, and she's doing her best, but... when they ask to bring her out later on, when the Village People do turn up, she's gone. She's obviously gone back to sleep because I think she's just had that really rough schedule of, you know, premieres and parties and whatnot and being flown out from Sydney to Melbourne. And so it's a fine interview. Right. One thing I didn't know, though, who was in this was a very young Harry Medved and his book that was just published at the time, the 50 Worst films of all time, is that what it is? Yeah, I think that's what it is. While John puts his catch.
Yeah, yeah, it's like the Hollywood Hall of Shame, the 50 worst movies of all time.
Yeah, but
you see, I had to throw my cat into a safe room.
Yeah. So yeah, we get the.
But Harry Medved was, he comes out. He's a young kid. He's like 17.
19 in that one.
18 or whatever.
Yeah, 19.
90, yeah, he was super young.
Yeah. And he basically talks about his new book that he wrote with his brother. And of course they mention all the usual suspects, Plan 9 from Outer Space, Robot Monster, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, etc. And the way the audience are reacting to these films, they'd act like they'd never heard of these things. As are of these lost works of art, if you will. As bad as they are. And yeah, it was just interesting to see people react to them. And even Don Lane's couldn't believe. And Valerie Perrine, who's in Hollywood, had never heard of these things. So it was interesting to see a young Harry Medved in that. Then we get on to, the ventriloquist. I forgot the guy's name. Chris Kirby. Never heard of this guy. But actually enjoyed his spot. I think it was fine. I couldn't have done what he was doing with that bogan-looking doll Terry that he had, and
I was disappointed, Stu, because I thought like he was like maybe you'd had him as a neighbor or something, because I'd never heard of him before. I was like, well, certainly he must be a staple of Australian entertainment or something. And
no, like I mean, some of these guys would come in and they'd be hot for a minute, then they'd be gone, and I mean, really, how long are the career can you have as a ventriloquist? There's only so far you can go. Like that guy, Jeff Dunham, he was hot for a minute, but yeah. You know, with Ahmed, the whatever was that, the Ahmed doll he had. I mean, it was funny, but yeah, there's only so much you can do before you are.
I was a kid, Willie Tyler and Lester were the big act of ventriloquism.
Yeah.
And Waylon Flowers and Madam. So for the people wanting a more gay act, that was there too.
Yeah.
But they were on every variety show they could get on. Like you, obviously, if you had that act, you probably had to hustle and get on as many game shows and talk shows as you could. And maybe Australia didn't have the type of market that could support an act like that. That's just kind of a gimmick.
You know? No, well, we're still young with television. We'd only been around for maybe 20 years at the time. So maybe a bit less than that.
Right.
Colour had just come in really about 73, 74, mm-hmm. something like that. Or was it 75? It might have been 75. So Colour had only been in television just a few years. So we were still a burgeoning industry in that sense. But yeah, Chris Kirby, never heard of the guy. I don't think I've even heard of him mentioned since. I mean, he met the Queen, so he must have been doing something right at the time.
He's big for a cup of coffee at least.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But so we get his act, and then we get into, if I'm not mistaken, Don's Wheel. Something that I remember seeing all the time. And they brought out that lady, that elderly lady, who was very short. Very, very short. I mean, yeah, Don's 6'4", whatever he was. Bert's about 6 foot, I believe. This lady had to be struggling to hit 5 feet. She was pretty damn short, but hey, she won the car, she spun the wheel, and she got that really crappy looking Toyota Corolla when they had that advertised $6,400 for that absolute what is now classed as a piece of shit, which is sure, for a new car would have ran nice, but didn't look very good. But I'll bet another thing, bet you it's a damn sight safer that car than what new cars are. Those are made of carbon fiber pieces of shit that they've got that crumple as soon as you put your finger on them. But yeah, the car, when I looked, I go, okay. I had one like that. That was my first one and it was awful. But so she spun the wheel, hit number one, got the Toyota Corolla, had to answer the question. I think she was struggling with the answer because I could see Bert in the back going, Nellie Melba, like that, giving her the answer. I mean, I think it was a brief shot of Bert saying Nellie Melba, and then her answering the question. But yeah, that was good. And then we finish up with the Village People coming out, obviously having just done a show at Festival Hall. Festival Hall is really, really close to where I work, and I'm not kidding. Very, very close to where I work these days. We're talking like a minute's drive. Or Festering Hall, if you went there in the summer, because there was no air conditioning at all. It was like a sweat box. But yeah, Festival Hall was a big deal back then. So they would have gone from West Melbourne, where that is, to Richmond, where GTV9 was. So yeah, it would have been looking about a 15-minute drive. So basically finished the show at Festival Hall, changed, and straight over there. But yeah, we got a good maybe 15 minutes with the Village People. They perform Can't Stop the Music. They sit down for an interview, and they seem a lot more with it than Valerie Preen is. but yeah, it was great. Thoroughly enjoyed it. So what were your thoughts on this show, John, being a first-time viewer?
It's interesting when you recommend it to me. I never heard of Don Lane before, and I started watching it expecting him to be Australian.
No.
And he comes on, he's like, "Hey, everybody, how's it going?" I'm like, wait a minute. He's like this Jewish-Italian from New York. What's going on here?
Yeah,
he's like a Guido.
known as the Lanky Yank. That was his nickname here.
Yeah, then I looked him up, looked up his story and everything, and a fascinating trivia footnote was he was originally cast as Eddie in Who Framed Roger Rabbit when they couldn't get any big-name actors to commit to the project.
Yeah.
And I think when because they'd asked, like, famous actors, and I guess actors that were baffled by the concept, and they had him kind of as a retainer in case they didn't get Bob Hoskins or anybody else, they were going to go with Don Lane.
Mm.
And which I could see why, because he's got like that kind of, he's got a Bogart look. He's like a tall, thin version of Bogart. So I could see why he was considered for the role and was like the second, he was the second choice in case Hoskins couldn't do it. But I looked up his story. It was pretty interesting. I have never known of a situation where a foreigner was brought to another country and put into a talk show and suddenly probably had the number one talk show on
easily.
TV. I've never heard of that anywhere.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, because I know that Johnny Carson did not allow The Tonight Show to be seen in England because he wanted to be able to vacation in England, you know, anonymously without anybody knowing who he was or being recognized. So I'm wondering, did he do the same thing with Australia? So he could come to Australia and not be recognized.
He
I don't know.
He may have, but then again, England is a lot closer than what Australia is from the US. It's a long-ass flight.
And I know Carson loved going to England, and he was always trying. The story was he was always trying to get Benny Hill on The Tonight Show. He loved Benny Hill's show.
Oh, really?
And Benny would not travel to California to do it.
No.
And by the time he actually did travel to California, Carson had retired, so that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And But was Carson seen in Australia at all?
I don't remember. It may have been. From my memory as a kid, I don't think so. I mean, I was all about Don Lane here back then. And,
right.
I remember the Osmond family show, or the Osmond show, whatever it was called, back, that was broadcast here. I remember seeing that.
Right.
Who actually in this episode they mentioned about this is a Monday night broadcast one. They speak about the Thursday night episode was the Osmonds being on there, which is on this set as well, thankfully. So but it's on YouTube anyway. But Don Lane was broadcast in the US. I didn't know that. Yeah,
he was.
Yeah, he says it in the episode that he was. When he's sitting down with Bert and he goes, "Oh yeah, that's," Bert goes, "Oh, you were being broadcast to the America, remember?" He goes, "Oh yeah, that's right, yeah," or something like that. But no, Don Lane was broadcast as well in the US, as obviously he was Australia wide here. Where he played in the US?
Maybe they test marketed him. I bet it was a test market thing.
Possibly.
Like, sometimes they'll put you in, like they'll air you in Sacramento, California, or maybe somewhere in Michigan. Just to see how it does. Because I know that a lot of the TV syndicators in the 80s were looking for competition to Carson because Carson had such a lock on that 10:30 to midnight, and eventually it was just 10:30 to 11:30 slot. And I know Alan Thicke had a show that was terrible called Thicke of the Night, but they actually yanked Letterman off of some affiliates just to air Thicke of the Night because the syndicators were trying that hard to get it out there. But
Yeah.
the only one who made a dent, I think, was like Arsenio Hall. That's the closest
Yeah.
they ever got to competition to Carson, because
That
he
was
bit into the youth
probably,
market. But I would,
yeah. Go on,
yeah.
sorry, John.
Yeah. Don Lane, I'm guessing maybe they test marketed him in some markets just to see how he did. But looking at it, it probably might have done well, but maybe the whole Australian thing just wasn't, it could have
Yeah,
some,
maybe.
if people are listening to the bitch in Sydney and Melbourne, they can't really, it's hard for Yanks to get the idea of, oh, they don't know where Sydney or Melbourne is, not in 1982 or 83 or whatever. So,
Did you
and
notice
certainly not in 1980.
Don
So,
Lane? Don Lane said Melbourne. He doesn't say Melbourne, so he's been
yeah.
acclimatized to living over here. And
Or do you think they coached him before broadcast to make
no,
sure
I
he
just think
knows
he was
everything
here so
correctly?
long, he was so used to hearing Melbourne, 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 because it was filming it 2 nights a week here. So obviously he's splitting his time, and that was not an uncommon thing as well, because there was a TV show with Graham Kennedy. Graham Kennedy is the king of television here. Burt Newton was an understudy of his. Burt Newton was his sidekick on the Graham Kennedy show, considered probably the biggest television show of all time over here. And
Right.
subsequent things that Kennedy did, Graham Kennedy hosted a show here called Blankety Blanks, which was basically the Match Game, Australian version. But you got a lot of people from Melbourne flying up to Sydney to record the shows because it was 5 episodes a week. So crisscrossing between Sydney and Melbourne was not an uncommon thing, which is what Lane was doing, staying in Sydney, flying to Melbourne 2 times a week, and then flying back to Sydney. But yeah, with him saying Melbourne, obviously it's his being acclimatized. And that's the way they say it in Sydney as well. They don't say Melbourne, they say Melbourne. So yeah, that's that. Another thing, just a bit of a tidbit about Don Lane. Had a very, very famous argument with James Randi on television. You probably can look it up on there, where Lane had Yuri Geller on quite a few times and was a big sort of supporter or believer of Geller and Geller's, which we know now about Yuri Geller. James Randi was on one night and got into a very heated debate with Lane, to the point where Lane got up, swiped everything off the table in front of him, walked off, and said to James, said, "We're going to a commercial break," and said to James Randi, pointed him, said, "And you can piss off," like that, and walked off. Yeah, never lived that one down. Yeah, very famous piece of television, that is, that James Randi interview. But boy, wasn't Randi right in the end, huh? About Yuri Geller, as we know. The guy was a.
Well, the I watched after I watched the show, I then watched that James Randi clip because it was mentioned on Wikipedia.
All right,
It was
yeah.
such a big thing. And then I watched there's like a Don Lane tribute on YouTube that I guess was an Australian TV special, where it showed like his best of clips and
That's
stuff.
it.
And
That's the
I
one.
bet I bet that's it.
Yeah.
And it was funny because they brought that up and then they cut back to Don Lane in the 90s and he's like, well, that was really smooth that night, wasn't I? Or something like that.
Yeah.
Like he kind of wrote it off. I think he knew he'd screwed up. And then
Oh
they
yeah.
showed a Yuri Geller clip and then he slowed it down. And he goes, hey, you think he's, is that a magnet coming out of his pocket? Like he suddenly realized, yeah, I was a
Yeah.
dupe the whole time, the funny thing about that special, it's like a 2 hour special and somebody uploaded it on YouTube. But it was funny because he intros it with a narration. He's like, "There's an old Aussie saying." It's like this guy sounds totally New York, and he can't
Yeah.
even be Australian philosophy.
Yeah.
Just, that was hilarious.
He
He
really
became
ingratiated
Australian
himself. He
basically.
really ingratiated himself into Australian life and Australian culture as well. It was very, very interesting to see a guy, a very, very prominent New Yorker, really, melding himself into an Australian lifestyle. And actually had quite a big bit of a hit back in the early 90s, I believe it was, hosting on the ABC Channel 2, the American football. So they would play a NFL game on here, and Don would host it every Saturday or every Sunday, whatever it was. I can't remember. Monday might have been. So he actually got a bit of a resurgence with that through American football. And actually helped bring American football to Australia as well via Don Lane. So, you know, he was really towards the end of his life where he got Alzheimer's and was really, really ill and, you know, passed away. I remember reading with an interview with Bert Newton where he goes that a few months before Lane died, he and Don spoke on the phone, obviously because Bert's in Melbourne and Don was in Sydney, for 2.5 hours. And he goes, he really struggled to remember things and people that we knew since forever. Yeah, which is tough. I mean, that would be tough to do. And that was that. But yeah, I mean, this box set is, well, these box sets are great. I remember watching the episode where Gene Simmons and Ace Frehley came out in mid-November 1980 on an episode. That is on this, even though it is not listed on the back as all the special guests. They got Robert De Niro, Peter Allen, Cloris Leachman, Dusty Springfield, Village People, Billy Connolly, Stevie Wonder, Demis Roussos, etc., etc. No mention of Kiss. I'm wondering if that is because they don't want the Kiss Army or the Kiss Corporation after him going, hey, our image rights. Yes. We want money. But there's no mention of Kiss anywhere.
I think
anywhere.
Umbrella was playing their cards close to the vest there.
Yeah, I think so. But these are great sets. I picked them up when they were $20 each at a clearance center. They are Gonski now for many, many years. And unfortunately, Umbrella never put any more than 2 volumes out. Whether these are the only episodes that survive, I don't know. Did they sell maybe enough to put out more? Obviously not. But I mean, I'm glad, you know, I'm thankful for the 32 episodes that are on there, the 50 plus hours I've got. More than happy about that. But yeah, that's it for the Don Lane Show. It was enormous. It was required viewing. It was to what Americans did with Johnny Carson, Don Lane, Australians did to Don Lane. Just sat down and watched the guy. And never see his type of game. We'll never see another than Bert Newton again. I mean, there'll be people who try. They ain't their asshole. They're not even close. And
Well, we haven't seen anybody in the U.S. close to Carson at all. No. It's like nobody's close. I mean, if you look at the ratings, like somebody like a Stephen Colbert gets, it's like, it's pathetic. It's like 3 million. It would have gotten, Carson would have been canceled by, you know, even in 93 with an audience that small. Like his ratings were, he was one of the only things on NBC that got ratings.
Is Colbert classed as variety or just an interview show? He's just more interviews.
It's supposed to be variety. I mean, variety really, like, okay, Don Lane, he's singing and dancing. Like, I noticed in that clip show, he did, like, a full Music Man number and everything. So this guy was talented where he could do the monologue and he'd go jump and do a singing song and dance routine with choreography and everything and backup dancers and all that stuff.
Yep.
So that was pretty cool. He was a multi-talent. Colbert and these other guys, none of them can do anything except come off like an asshole on TV. That's it. They're just an asshole with a mic. No talent. Their comedy writers aren't even that good. There's nothing there. It's just like, you're not looking at a fully formed person. You're looking at the type of person that becomes an actor. And actors are very rarely fully formed humans. But you see somebody like a Don Lane, he's like a Dean Martin. He's an entertainer. They can do it all. You know, they're a triple threat, a song, dance, and acting. They can do it all. They can do any of that stuff. And like you told me, Don Lane can do, he was doing sports casting as well. It's like, I can't think of, I couldn't imagine Colbert doing any sports casting at all. The guy doesn't look like he'd survive a game of ping pong. But it's like, Who's the other one? The guy who used to be Adam Carolla, or is Adam Carolla's big friend, Jimmy, whatever his name is, on ABC. Like, all these guys, none of them have anything to them. They'll all cry for Democrat policies and whatever the government wants and all this stuff. It's like, I don't want that stuff in my entertainment. I want entertainment. And it's like, that's what I noticed with Don Lane. There's no mention of politics.
Nope.
There was no, he didn't even mention that the Village People were gay. This is what I always have to tell people. The Village People were not presented as gay. It was up for you to figure that out. They were not declared, hey, these are gay guys from the Village. They
well,
were
even,
just performers. So it's
even
like,
the construction worker.
Girls coming down to get kisses.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And which yeah. was, I mean, that would be something that would not happen now. You wouldn't have, what John was saying was, with the Village People interview after that, they were there till the very end of the show and just going up, getting hugs and kisses off the Village People and autographs and et cetera, et cetera. That wouldn't happen now. But as you mentioned about Don not making any jokes about them being gay or anything, even the construction worker, David Hodo, has always kept his sexuality quiet. I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say we know, but he's never been one right. to say, oh, I'm this and yeah, I'm gay and I'm so proud. He's just, you know, it's not really an issue. It's not up for discussion.
Right.
Yeah, which is
it's like, who cares?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean,
just
most
enjoy
them,
the music.
Yeah, most of them were, not all. Victor Willis, the original cop who did the vocals for nearly all their big hits, was not. He was married to Felicia Rashad from The Cosby Show.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Simpson, the cop after that, who was the one in this episode, I don't believe was. But a lot of the others were like the. Pretty much all the others were, except for David Hodo, we don't know. But yeah, getting back to what you were saying, we don't, it's not broadcast. Oh, this gay band, the Village People, they are what they are. And
yeah,
one other thing about Don Lane, he didn't do it on this one, which was very interesting. He would always say at the end of the show, I love your faces, but he would do it in sign language as well. So he would go, I love your faces, like that. And he did that because he was a big disability rights activist.
Yeah.
And from what I read, even went back in 1988 to vote for George H.W. Bush because he was going to propose a bill about disability rights. So he went back and actually flew back to America to vote Bush, just yep. for that reason alone. So yeah, it's not on this episode, but I remember him doing it all the time where he did that. And that last episode, the one from 83, where he had a litany of people on. He had Robin Williams, I believe, was on there. He had David Bowie. All the biggest people you could think of at that time anyway. I think Liza Minnelli might have been there as well. But it was a really emotional thing to watch. It's still stuff to watch now and see Don say it for the last time. I love your face. It's
yeah.
It's sad. Because, I mean, he's a big part of my... And my youth growing up from, mm-hmm. up till age 12 when his show finished and beyond, really. I used to watch him on the NFL. I don't really care much for American football. I mean, I don't dislike it, but I'm not in love with it. I don't mind watching it. But watching it with Don hosting it, he would explain the game to Australians unfamiliar with it. But of course, he'd always be wearing his silver Giants jacket. He's a huge... Giants fan, so yeah,
right.
But yeah, he just made TV
did he have his
fun.
Gold watch and his did he wear the bling like the gold chain?
Quite possibly, yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah,
but interesting fact as well about Don Lane. Lane is not his last real name. It's Isaacson. He took Lane from Frankie Lane, but just dropped the I.
Right.
Like Frankie Lane has L-A-I-N-E, whereas Lane is L-A-N-E. But yeah. Interesting guy, but wouldn't have been as successful without Bert Newton. Bert Newton was critical to the success of that show as well. And Don knew it. He was also the sort of guy, from what Newton was saying, wouldn't care about other people stealing the limelight. It didn't matter as long as the end product, the show, was enjoyable and a ratings hit. He didn't care if somebody took the limelight away from him or stole a joke off of Don. He didn't give a care. He didn't give a crap. He was just, I just want the finished product to be good. not I want to look good.
Because you're there as a host. You're a host. You're not necessarily the star of the show.
No.
For the segment, when you bring out a guest, the guest is the star. You're the host. Course. And you're just supposed to... You got to help them shine because they're basically there to promote, you know, whatever. So I think that's why he's really good at what he does. If you watch Letterman always kind of insisted on, oh, it's me on mic and this guest, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, forget who the guest is. You got to watch me. Howard Stern kind of had the same issue, I think.
Okay.
And it's where you, and it's a different thing when you're a host doing it well. Carson never was there to outshine the guest.
No.
And I noticed with Don Laney, he wasn't trying to outshine the guest ever in this one, you know, this 2-hour episode I watched. Mm. At no time did he ever try to steal the limelight.
No.
And now on the clip with him and James Randi, obviously Randi offended him because I think he was friends with one of the psychics that Randi was talking mm-hmm. about. And I think that's what got to him emotionally.
Yeah.
And that's where he blew up.
Yeah.
He lost his cool. So.
Yeah. But I mean, hey, yeah, made for great television. I don't know.
Yeah, it did. It was
kept
it was
his name out
pretty
there.
Compelling to watch.
It was, but
yeah, exactly. But it would be funny if some of his football commentary was uploaded just to see it, just to hear him explain to us.
Strange,
this is
Ulysses,
yeah. You know, yeah. That kind of New York way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is how the game is played with the pigskin. The yeah. Steelers are going to be throwing a good game here.
Yeah. But it was good. He would be on before the game.
That actually seemed interesting. I'm going to watch more Don Lane, I think, whatever I find on YouTube, just to check this out. I certainly can't get those Umbrella discs anymore.
No. Well, it looks like the uploader of this episode has got these two sets and uploaded all the episodes on there. So they're out there right. for you to watch. But yeah, with his football commentary he did on the ABC or Channel 10, one or the other, I think it was the ABC, he would be on before the game. The show would always open with a montage of football, sort of like a football montage, to John Mellencamp's Paper and Fire was the song that would play at the start of the show. So every time I hear that song, I think, oh, well, it's the old football show of Don Lane. It's that song.
That's hysterical.
Yeah. And Lane would be on before the show, or before the game, sorry, at halftime, and then after the game as well. And just giving his insights. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was the time that I was compelled by American football more than any other. And again, I don't hate the game, so don't come at me saying, oh, you hate America. No, I just, the game, it's okay. I can watch it, but it's not something I'm not invested in. I'm not like an Eddie Trunk. Oh, my Giants lost. Oh, they're going to play the Dallas Cowboys this week. I'm going to bet on them. And I don't care. It's just, you know, whatever.
In America, it's more part of the culture, you know.
Oh, I can imagine. I could certainly imagine. So, yeah, I'm not.
Like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. I was in there. In 2015, Deflategate right. was on at that time, and I freaking heard everything about Deflategate. It was everywhere. You couldn't escape it. So
yeah.
I understand what you're talking about in Boston. So anyway, I think we're going to wrap it up. Yeah, man, I really enjoyed this episode. This is another 10, because this is just the enjoyment factor on artistic merit.
I was very
merit.
Entertained by it. I was surprised how entertained it was.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I really am glad you liked it. I figured you'd get some sort of enjoyment out of it, but yeah. I thought I did tell you that Don Lane was American. I mustn't have. Doesn't matter. Good surprise.
I think you might have mentioned it, but I probably didn't hear you, or it was... I just forgot about it when I started watching. I went, wait a minute, he's American.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Because, Mel Gibson talks and he still sounds Australian, you know.
Yes, yeah.
But, so I was thinking, oh, he was like Mel and he came over here when he went to Australia when he was a kid and, you know, or whatever. But no, he was like a young, probably in his 30s or whatever when he went to Australia and became a TV star.
So yeah, in his early 30s. He would have been 46 or something when he did this one. But, quick point I want to bring up about Valerie Perrine was 36 when she did this interview, just about to turn 37. I want to dispel a theory that the Manosphere has about when women hit 30, they become washed up. I disagree. Watch this and tell me that that is a woman at nearly 37 who's washed up. I'm calling bullshit on that. You are grifters.
Well, did you notice the most fascinating aspect of that interview? He asked her about Superman 2, which had not been released.
Oh,
and she
yeah.
said, I shot that 5 years ago.
Yeah, and she goes, so, he goes, what's the holdup? She goes, oh, the Selkins want more money, which ended up being the case. It was all the Selkins in the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I remember it got released in England like a year before everywhere else or something crazy like that.
Yeah. Yeah, we got it in 1980, I believe, and US got it in 81, didn't you? That one.
Yeah, it's summer of 81 is when I saw it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we got it at the same time as the UK, or Europe, I should say, which was, it would have been 1980. So, yeah, it wasn't far away by the time that interview was done. Also interesting to see her conversation about an upcoming film she was doing with Jack Nicholson, which ended up being The Border, which wouldn't come out till 2 years yeah. later. And are describing illegal aliens, which she said, as wetbacks.
Yeah. Yep.
And whatever the other term was that Lane used, but it was just openly said without any sort of afterthought about, oh, I shouldn't have said that, which is the most
right.
exhilarating thing to watch with this and with Shanana. What was said, no one even gave a care about afterwards and thought, oh no, the repercussions because fuck that. I'm just, I'm just glad to see, it even says on the back of the box here, the inappropriate content of this show. I thought, oh, man, it's not inappropriate. Yeah, it's inappropriate by today's stupid standards, but not by then. It was there was never well, things like that today, mentioned in
today's
the
standards. There's no bitter women. Everybody is a unit or something. I don't know what the hell it's supposed to be today.
We're all Marilyn Manson in the front of the Mechanical album, Animals album. We're just, non-gendered human beings. We're just...
He predicted the future. He's
he
our,
did,
our
yeah.
Nostradamus.
Yeah. Marilyn Manson predicting the future back in 98. Holy shit. 25 years on and he got it right. But yeah. Yeah, but man, I'm going to give this a 10 out of 10. I love it. I thought it was great. I'll be diving into this set over the weekend when I got a bit of free time. I just cannot wait to really catch up on these. And relive my youth, I guess.
Yeah.
Because modern television
sucks. I can see why.
Yeah. And
it's miserable today.
And Sean, I know as well. I'm going to see if I can track down some more of those and watch those. Because hell, it was just as much fun in its own way. But before we go, let's give a shout out to our Ko-Fi donators this week. We only got one. Mr. Ben Spar gave a very, very generous donation again. So thank you, mate. Guys, we're going to keep pushing this. So don't think that you're going to try and outrun it. We're going to push it every week. Ko-Fi.com/Midnight Movie Cowboys. The link is below. Please help the show out. Send us a few bucks, whether you want to do it recurring every month or if you want to do a 1 month or a one-off donation. It's up to you. But look, pour money into this show. It is all going to go back into the show. It's not going anywhere with nefarious means. There's no, money laundering a la William Defoe style from Television.
I don't look
LA.
At this as a money maker at all.
It's not. But, I mean, it just helps keep the wheels rolling with, fees that we have with, Zoom and all the other platforms we've got. And if we need new software, again, as I said, some are free, but some are not. And you can go, oh man, go to the Pirate Bay and download it. You can get a cracked version. Yeah, that's fine until, the thing stops working because you got an out-of-date license. And I'm not going to do that sort of crap anymore. I haven't done that sort of thing, not anymore. But yeah, you know what I mean. Look, don't go to the Pirate Bay. It's not good. It's not recommended.
I'm done with Pirate Bay, to be honest with you. It's everything I tried to grab from there doesn't work.
Hey, hence why we've got to buy the programs to keeps going. Mm. But so that's that. Anything else that we've got? No, I have actually started doing some episodes with Wolfie over at W2M. Watch this movie. I recorded one last week, which should be out hopefully by the time this drops, which is a recently seen that we did. I'm recording with Wolfie tomorrow, where we're going to be talking about Repo Man, a film I've never seen either, but I'm curious to see. And yeah, so I'm doing a couple more after that, maybe one more, I'm not too sure. Oh, shout out to our mate Eric Mulder, who him and his wife had their son a couple of days back.
Oh, cool.
Oh, so
Very cool.
young Samuel was born. So yeah, congratulations to you, mate. And yeah, I think that's it. Anything else, John? Nope.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, we will say good night, and I'm gonna say I love your faces.
And now it's time for Rue Britannia with your foreign correspondent, the Nez.
In a move that will surprise no one other than those who still think that Go the Gay Way should have been included in Top Gun Maverick, the BBC apologised this week to, well, frankly, let's see, Prince William, Prince Charles, ex-royal nanny Dilek Burke, and last but not least, Meghan Markle's wife. The apologies in relation to the 1995 episode of the BBC documentary series Panorama, featuring disgraced BBC journalist Martin Bashir. Not least given how Bashir and the production team fake bank documentation to manipulate the deceased ex-princess into consenting to being interviewed. Putting it bluntly, screwing two heirs to the throne and accidentally killing the mother of the heir to the throne, well, it certainly tops the idea of employing Savile for atrocity. It was only a matter of time before one of them took the BBC to the High Court and sued them. One of them did. All hardly surprising given that the BBC also faked an allegation that Prince Charles was in a relationship with the royal nanny Tigerleg Burke that he managed to basically persuade her to have an abortion. Suffice to say, none of this was ever true. Consequently, it was these rumours that persuaded Diana, Princess of Wales, to consent to an interview with the BBC in the first place. The BBC and the High Court apologised and agreed to pay damages to all four and promised never to repeat the episode of Panorama in question ever again. Naturally, these days I don't pay the annual BBC £153 licence fee and don't miss the BBC at all. The BBC. My part in its downfall. Twats, and ex-model cam ex-vacuous zombie in a frock cam ex-human serviette Kate Moss, stunned the London media this week by alleging that during her career she was bullied into taking her clothes off. Yeah, I know. Anyway, the 40-year-old super-encrusted cockatoo relived the nightmarish ordeal of being one of the world's most expensive semi-naked fashion models in a desperate bid to shed her image as a fecund intellectual. Quote-unquote, I was only 15, probably, said the wench. And he said, take your top off, and I was really shy then about my body, she exclaimed. Yes, wasn't she just. After all, using your sexuality for 15 years to advance a career in modelling clearly indicates she's suffering remorse. Why not go over to YouTube and type in the phrase Kate Moss naked? If anything, just to see the extent to which her career was effectively evidently a lie. Johnny Depp. Poor taste in women. Fun. And it was right bothered this week as Evita Peron and her wife Harry Sparkle's mansion in LA was burgled twice in the course of 12 days alone. Well, the Sparkles will flaunt it. Sadly, the two wooden tops were busy at the UN last week curing lepers, so the burglars were therefore spared the acute social embarrassment of having to accidentally meet the miracle workers. Others have not been so blessed. The $14.7 million mansion boasts 9 bedrooms, 16 bathrooms, and a detached guest house. In a tough, unstable, uncaring world, lacking empathy, it's nice to know that the Markles and all of their sackcloth and ashes humility and compassion are genuinely trying to lead a good moral example on climate change. Finally, further notes in passing, actor Martin Clunes gets into a dispute with his neighbours over their plans to build a residential site for gypsies. Surely the point about itinerants is that they don't actually want a site to begin with, if you ask me. Meanwhile, former BBC newsreader Jan Leeming recovers in France after being physically assaulted. This 35 years after having acid thrown in her face. Well, people will work for the BBC. And a bunch of clinically brain-damaged ex-rugby union players are now suing the English Rugby Football Union over their injuries. Which begs the question, who are the most brain-damaged of the two? The players or the spectators? I'll toss a coin. PAX.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.